You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. And our guest on this hour of the Made of Clay Report is Uriel Carpenter. Uriel, it's good to have you here this morning.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
So the way we start the show is just with this, the big question, who are you? What do we need to know about you? Little bits and pieces or the large pieces of the mosaic that's your life so we can start this conversation and model getting to know each other.
Absolutely. What a big question. Yeah, so I live here in Ithaca. I've been here since 88, 89 when I moved here in high school with my family. Mm-hmm. My family is actually three brothers, a sister, two nieces and a nephew.
It's a growing family.
And my parents. And actually, I've got the youngest in the family now. He's 14 months old. Uh-huh. And we all live here in Ithaca, except for my youngest brother who moved to California 2 days ago. So that was a pretty big event in the family.
Yes, a major change.
Absolutely. Yeah. The baby of the family, he's 21 years younger than I am. Uh-huh. And certainly all my siblings, my parents, family, very close. And actually, there's one really great story that occurred once when I was sitting with all my siblings at the Ithaca Bakery having lunch. And a friend of mine walked in and said, "Hey, Uriel," and then looked around at all my siblings and said hi to each of them, actually knew every single one of us, and then said, "So how do you all know each other?" Because in spite of all living here, we're all very different, follow our own paths a bit and uh-huh. do our own thing, uh-huh. But kind of overlap and share a community of family as well.
And do you look a little bit different?
I think we look very different, although when you know we're related, it's probably pretty easy to pick it out.
Yeah, I'm one of seven siblings, and we have lots of different hair colors and complexions in our family, but if you look at the facial structures, you'll see the similarities, but a lot of people, you know, it's kind of funny.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So that's a great story. I'll remember that one. I'll remember that one. So I interrupted. Did you want to say
more? Oh, not at all. Yeah, so... let's see, I've kind of moved in and out of town over the course of years mm-hmm. and have been back since 2011. Moved here then with my fiancé at the time, and we got married 4 years ago, mm-hmm. just had our anniversary, and had a baby a year ago. Mm-hmm. And we actually moved last year to be a mile down the street from my parents, my sister, and my brother, so that... we don't have to do all that on our own.
Right.
I don't know how anybody ever would do it on their own.
Right. And you just, this is, anyway, we'll get down to those topics later. And more. And what else? What else?
Let's see. I have a radio show on Sunday evenings mm-hmm. With my friend Tim, and we talk about astrology, which is probably the most significant activity I take part in these days. Mm-hmm. It's my profession. I'm work as an astrologer, and that's probably been about the last 5 years after stints in quite a few other things. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I also have half a dozen other undertakings. One of which, my favorite, is taking kids out on wilderness canoeing trips.
Oh wow.
And I do that probably 4 or 5 weeks out of the year, mm-hmm. which used to be my full-time gig. And it was just much less interesting to live out in the woods when I had a family, wife, etc.
Yes, well, when you have those ties and having a new round of people traveling with you every X number of weeks or days.
So I still get out for 2 or 3 weeks in the spring and in the fall, mm-hmm. which is great. And I tend to be one of those people who likes to do a little of this and a little of that. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine has me in to do a guest lecture up at Ithaca College every semester, and I get to talk about water in the human body, which uh-huh. was one of my former jobs, was teaching anatomy and physiology at the massage school here in town. Uh-huh. And sort of how water and viewing the body as a more fluid, dynamic process,
a hydrologic process.
Yeah, exactly. And then I actually still teach a little bit of massage up at Cornell. They teach PE classes.
around massage.
Doing massage, which I think is fantastic. Mm-hmm. And I love getting to engage with young people in that way. So a number of the different directions my life is taking at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's lots of different parts, lots of complexity, but I mean, you present them with grace and ease and they hold together.
Well, they feel like it to me, at least.
Yeah, no, I mean, and that comes off, that comes clear. So we're going to start with some music. Do you have a place where we should go to begin with?
Oh, wow. You know, I'd love to just kick it off with that pop song, the Christina Perry.
Okie doke. And this is A Thousand Years.
And promises, how to be brave, how can I love when I'm afraid to fall, but watching you stand.
Listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this hour is Uriel Carpenter. So, you have a wonderfully rich and complex life that you just opened up for us. What are some of the experiences that have shaped you so you can hold that and appreciate it and keep that in the gentle way that you just opened it up?
You know, probably the most significant, and I sometimes wish I could package this one up and offer it to people or point them in this direction.
So that they could live it.
Yeah. And I have my older brother, Kendall, actually, to thank for it, because he pointed me in the direction of going to sea. And there's a vast world of literature, actually, from 100 and 200 and 300 years ago that says, you know, get out on the waves and on the ocean and make your fortune and find adventure. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't really the depth of change that happened for me. I enlisted in the Merchant Marines, which means getting a certain number of trainings.
Right. Going to school. And
exactly right. And the work that I did specifically was in oceanography. And it's sort of like a niche market, if you will. You could work more in a commercial field or transport. And this also my brother pointed me towards. And so you're running the shipboard operations for boats that are traveling around the world studying birds, plants, water, rocks, mm-hmm. microorganisms,
whales, you
name it. And, you know, so the first and foremost thing that stands out is you're part of this very tight-knit community that's in a totally independent and isolated environment. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, I think we would sometimes have a cruise that would be 65 or 70 days long. So we're out on the ocean without any kind of interaction with no news, no phone, no internet in truth. And also some more subtle things, you know, no cars, you never get in a car and drive, no stores.
Everything's within walking distance.
For several months, you never actually pull out a dollar or a credit card and spend any money on anything. But then also in these many ways, every one of your utilities, if you want electricity, you've got to make the electricity in some way and manage it. If you want water, if you want food, you've got to be incredibly mindful of it. When you have trash, it just sits there in your lap until you find something to do with it. And so it just shrinks the world down in this way where you become aware of all of the interrelated connections.
You see the possibility of every action and its consequence in a very limited environment.
Exactly right. You know, so I would oftentimes, I loved it also in part because I had many jobs. I would scrub toilets. Uh-huh. I would drive the ship. I'd do maintenance and scale rust. I'd launch, you know, $10 million piece of equipment. I'd swim with sharks to collect samples, you know, you name it. And you know, you get that feeling of working with a couple people in a you know, smoothly oiled relationships. We're just getting something done that you can only get done by working together.
And there's risk to your life, or risk to the equipment, or risk to the place you are.
There are constant risks. That's a fact. And that you're aware of. You know, so I would sort trash, and I would sort the plastic out from the paper and the cans and the glass, and being one of the longtime residents and workers on the ships, other people who came on more infrequently would sometimes be curious about the job. Mm-hmm. And then I'd get this big bundle of food scraps and paper and metal, and I'd chuck it over the side into the middle of the ocean. Mm-hmm. And they'd say, well, what are you doing? Why are you throwing the trash in the ocean? And I'd usually just ask questions like, what do you do with your trash back home?
Right.
Like, well, I put it, you know, into the recycling, and where does it go?
Right.
You know, so following the stream to the end oftentimes means that it's out of sight, out of mind, and we don't even know what the impact we're having on the world may be. And here you just are taking full responsibility for it.
Right.
You know, so the things I was throwing in the ocean were things that would literally disappear within a couple weeks. Believe it or not. And the things that I was pulling out were things we'd have to take home and manage in another fashion.
Like the plastics.
Absolutely. And the plastics.
Yeah.
You got it. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. But the metal will probably disintegrate with.
No. You wouldn't believe how fast it disappears.
Interesting. So how did that experience change the young man who went to sea?
Yeah, you know, the things that still come
was this,
back.
Was this out of high school? I mean, also,
oh,
was it
you know, that was in my, of, probably around, I think, 23, 24.
So this was later, yeah.
A little
yeah,
later.
Yeah. Had yeah, you been to college, or?
You know, I tried college for a semester, mm-hmm. played soccer, the soccer season ended, and...
so did college.
That was enough for me, honestly.
Uh-huh.
And then I did a number of things. I trained to be an EMT, tried that, mostly worked in search and rescue, taught for the Red Cross for a while, started getting very curious and interested in education. Actually, it was I studied enough things on my own and in different school environments mm-hmm, mm-hmm. that it pretty quickly sparked an interest in teaching for me, which mm-hmm. has probably been the steadiest thread of my, you know, identity and in a work way.
Right. And also it's a teacher who really is a teacher is also just barely ahead of the students, if that at all, in terms of their own learning. It's a constant
That's
process.
Right.
It's a good excuse to remain a learner for your whole life.
I know when you have a teacher who's, doesn't remember what it was like to be a student anymore, it can be a little bit yeah. tough to keep up. Absolutely.
So I got sidetracked even I think from my own.
Oh no, that's okay.
How did you change? How did the sea change you? How many years did you go on those travels? And when you came back to kind of live more permanently on land, what was different?
Yeah, so it was between 6 and 8 months a year for about 7 years mm-hmm. that I did that.
So till you were 30 or so.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Till I was 30, and you know, there are a couple of things in particular. One was really developing a relationship with myself. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of solitary time, and no way to really reach out to the people that you know in certain ways, and. Part of that relationship with myself, I would say it was interesting because I'd loved to journal before then mm-hmm, and sort mm-hmm, of mm-hmm. write things down. And there were times when at sea and the sort of the routine and the rhythm that you're in where that cognitive life of reflection just faded away from me. And I would sit and look at a blank piece of paper and realize I didn't even have a thought to write down.
Uh-huh.
And I just walk back outside and look at the ocean and feel the space between the sky and the water and see the meeting of these elemental forces and experience myself in this way. It was like, oh, I'm standing right here on the horizon. This is where the ocean and the sky meet. Uh-huh. And in 360 degrees around me, the ocean and the sky are doing something in some kind of sacred and magnificent relationship to one another. And I didn't think how I'm part of that. I just experienced that. And so, you know, there's even a moment when one of the jobs that I had meant swimming, being in the mm-hmm, water mm-hmm. and the work we were doing had to be very well removed from the boat. So I was like 3 miles away on a tiny little rowboat mm-hmm. far away from the bigger boat where I lived.
Right.
And I'm just this little head floating in miles deep water and feeling myself kind of bobbing up and down and really had that experience of some kind of connection, you know, just and belonging. I would describe it as a little bit of an anchor because I can almost viscerally just go back to that place and it... maybe it's a little like the mountain pose in yoga where you just feel like you're so still in not needing to do anything or make something happen or go anywhere. Mm-hmm. And that was a sensation I'd certainly never had.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a sensation I love going back to. I guess it's I would simply describe it as a sense that I don't need to do something in order to be yeah. in right relationship.
Right. I am.
Yeah.
And the emphasis is am.
There we go.
Because that is just an integrated, seamless oneness in the universe. And many of us don't get to experience it in that way. I learned, had that experience as a teenager pouring myself across the rolling prairie of northwest Missouri after thunderstorms, or when you would have to go out and discover what had happened with the damage from the night before, or the animals, or the whatever, and you are you don't know what you're going to run into, and you don't know what you're going to be, but you're just there, and everything that moves moves in you, and you move with it. It's a very powerful
moment. Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. So that was what was just going through my soul when you were describing being on the water.
Yeah. And you know, when you're with sailors or other people who get that, it's a great feeling to look at somebody's face and see it in their eyes and realize you don't have to say a word, that there's just a recognition of even sharing that with other people. So that's pretty special also.
Yeah. Yeah, I think our eye contact changed in that moment on both sides.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I'm going to do the station ID, and what music should we cut to next?
Oh.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report.
Well, we should just go to the
Carpenter.
The Crosby, Stills, and Nash, probably.
That's a no-brainer. Okay,
after that.
Here we go, yes.
Out of town on a boat from the southern islands, sailing to reach before a following sea. She was making for the trades on the outside and the downhill run to Papeete. Off the wind on this heading live the Marquesas. Got 80 feet of a waterline, nicely making way in a noisy bar in Avalon. I tried to call you, but on a midnight watch I realized why twice you ran away. Think about
how many times I had fallen. Spirits are using me. Larger voices crawling. What heaven brought you and me? Can I be forgotten? Southern Cross for the first time, you understand now why you came this way. 'Cause the truth you might be running from is so small, but it's as big as the promise of a coming day. So I'm sailing for tomorrow, my dreams are dying, and my love is an anchor tied to you,
tied with a silver chain.
I have my ship and all her flags are flying. She is all that I have left,
and music is her name.
Think about
how many times I have fallen. Spirits are using me. Larger voices.
Thank you.
tested, and we never failed to fail. It was the easiest thing to do. You will survive being bested. Somebody fine will come along, make me forget about loving you. In the Southern Cross,
Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young and Southern Cross, and you're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca. This is the Made of Clay Report, and Uriel Carpenter is our guest on this hour. So, Uriel, how have you, when you came back to land, you know, after, what, 30 or your early 30s, what then did you do in your life?
Oh, well, I tried at having a serious relationship. I hadn't had one of those before.
I hear emphasis on tried and serious.
You know, I was 30 years old, and I still had a flame for my high school sweetheart, I guess you could call her.
Sure.
And we gave it a try after, you know, having, you know, maintained contact and not necessarily seeing each other and going our own ways. Mm-hmm. And it definitely didn't work out,
right.
Largely because, you know, I had absolutely no skills in relationship and for whatever other reasons. But happily it wasn't meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, I was invited to come teach at the Finger Lakes School of Massage by a really dear friend of mine who now owns Rasa Spa. And it was a perfect place to learn how to relate to people, to listen to people, to care about people.
Uh-huh.
There actually, I think, were something like 30 women on staff and very, very, very few, I might say no men at the time.
Right.
And I had just come from an environment where
all men,
yeah, absolutely.
We could almost all men.
We could go months and months without any women coming on board, and a very male environment. I will say, not necessarily like you might imagine it. It wasn't like a terrible, overbearing machismo.
Not a preening macho male environment, but just men who work together.
Yeah, exactly right.
And this is more exactly like blue collar, working class men who work together.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was a sort of turned me upside down sort of feeling,
uh-huh.
and was great. As I often do, sort of noticed it,
uh-huh.
and then let myself reflect and question what's going on here. You know, assuming maybe that something is guiding me, you know, from one mm-hmm, place mm-hmm. to the next, giving me opportunities to learn and grow. What am I here to learn about and grow into? And one of those things was definitely about process and the importance of listening to everybody's voices, recognizing each person's experience, taking steps away from the "this is right, that's wrong" sort of
right.
mentality
right.
into this is where I'm coming from and this is where I'm coming from sort of mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody who worked up there was really good at that. And, well, we all tried to be really good at that,
yeah,
because
I mean,
we knew how important it was.
Your practice.
Exactly
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And after working there for a number of years, actually, I got to be really, really good friends with one of my co-teachers, who's now my wife.
Uh-huh.
And that's been fantastic.
That's neat. Neat. So you found the skills and you found yourself a wife.
I guess you could put it that way.
I'm sorry, I couldn't resist after the seafaring life, you know?
Yeah.
I can even get a little poem out of it there.
Absolutely. Well, you know, when I was still working on board ship, and I can wake up some mornings and there's like a pain in my stomach so sharp, I miss it so badly.
Uh-huh.
But not that you can't succeed at both. my friends who I worked with out at sea all struggled in their relationships, and they struggled to be good dads. They struggled to be good husbands. And I do think there's a little bit of an element of escape that comes from that line of work.
Right, and it may be a necessary buffer of escape, or it may be a timeout from which you can come back and kind of find your bearings, or at least appreciate what you don't know.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So I want to not really fast forward. So through those years of teaching, you said you went away again and then came back around 2011.
Yeah, you know, that was for a number of reasons. One, the massage school was in a big transition at the time, and it felt like a good time to get out. One thing for me personally was I loved the students, loved all the students I ever worked with there, and it's an intensive program that books through 6 months of very deep transformative learning, and then it's for me, it was a little bit of whiplash where like, oh, and now we're back to day one.
Yes.
And I just couldn't hack that that kind of
after a certain number of years.
Especially because I'd get to the graduate, you know, stage of things and conversations and see how everything we've talked about for 5.5 months takes us into this incredible new understanding of what the body is. And it's a new beginning unto itself to start here. Right. And I wanted to carry on with that, which is really where I have gone with my life since. But the class was graduating, and we were ready for new students, and that was the job. So it was not the right one for me at that time.
So that's a great segue. You know, where have you gone to explore what you do after you know this about how the body works, or how we come to kind of be material beings with spiritual
life? Right. Well, on the surface, my wife and I left together, and we actually moved into a tent for a month, and then we moved into a boat for a month, and then we moved into a tiny little rundown RV and took off for the West Coast. And that was great because we did it a little intentionally, wanting to experience each other away from Ithaca, away from our families, away from familiar places, to get to develop our relationship out in the world.
I mean, you put your little rowboat out on the waters, only it was an RV.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. And we landed in Northern California for a while, doing some really great work and getting a chance to deepen our relationship before there was a chance to come back, which was actually some really good friends were taking the astrology school that I had been a student of prior to moving away and giving it a home. And they asked Meredith and I to be caretakers and hold the space of the school. And astrology can be many things depending on who you are and what your approach is. And definitely the approach of this particular school and community is viewing it as a sort of a deep kind of transformative work, if you will, and and also a healing environment, a place where you really get to go to the parts of yourself which are usually buried or repressed or hidden or have some reason not to go there. I don't want to label it with any other words.
Right.
And then gives you a way to just look really closely at yourself in a supportive community where people will see you and love you for it. And you'll have a chance to see yourself and embrace the parts of yourself that through setting aside, you've actually created limitations in your own life without meaning to. So we came back and moved into the school, which was out in Town of Caroline near Shindangan Hollow for 4 years, and we got engaged, got married, had a baby, and had a real chance to experience a small but tight-knit community of people that really felt like they were supportive of us, not necessarily like out in the world, but supportive in more subtle ways.
Can you unpack that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. Or I'll try. I'll start just by making it personal for myself. Sure. And, you know, one of the things that I've often wrestled with is when I go out into the world, everything that I love is something not human. Mm-hmm. And not necessarily impacted or influenced by humans. Mm-hmm. I love the middle of the ocean because it's probably the wildest place, the most unimpacted place in many ways. And of course, we know that there's pollution there as well.
Right. And continents of plastic floating around.
Yeah, or whatever. Sure enough. Yeah. Exactly right. You know, so for myself, over the course of my life, trying to find direction, and I should say more trying to choose what actions I mm-hmm. should take. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where really feel the limited focus of my own time and attention and energy, and how I'm going to direct it and right. and spend that quality of I am of selfhood,
right.
And not really feeling like there was any model. Of something that I saw people doing, other humans doing, mm-hmm. that spoke to me. Like, that's something that feels valuable and brings more beauty and what I care about into the world.
Right.
Other than helping other humans stop doing damage. And I think I decided for myself really early that, you know, a kind of mitigating the negative influences of human sort of commercialism mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. development and right. progression was not what I wanted to do with my life. I didn't right. want to work against something my whole life.
The EMT wasn't the route for you.
Absolutely not.
On a global or immediate level. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, I could say that there was another reason I left the world of oceanography as a merchant marine. Mm-hmm. My favorite 3 months ever spent out at sea was basically in one spot out in the middle of the Gulf of Alaska, and we were studying deep sea corals, and we were bringing up samples of corals from like way down. These are not like the corals of the coral reef coral right, you can right. snorkel in. And we brought up this one magnificent specimen one day, and this is about the size of a person, you know, weighs about 150, 200 pounds. And the estimated age, you wouldn't even be able to guess how old this single living organism is.
50,000 years?
Pretty close. Closer to around 10.
Okay.
But a 10,000-year-old...
Ancient, yeah.
And to me, it's a person. It's a 10,000-year-old person.
Who's no longer living once you bring it up that high.
That's exactly right.
Wow.
And I was like, well, gosh, I thought that, you know, science was a great way to sort of understand the world more deeply so that we could not do as much damage. And the level of heartbreak that I just felt looking at this dead thing
yeah.
that we had just killed was too hard for me to bear personally. Mm-hmm. And so I knew I had to kind of move away from that line of work regardless.
Right. Right. It wasn't free of doing damage.
Yeah, exactly right.
And whenever you want to study a system, you also damage the system. And that's because the act of separating your awareness and its function, you know.
So one takeaway there for me was, like, how often is the damage that we do unintentional?
Yeah.
And it was a really guiding question for me for a while. And I thought, it's actually the damage that is probably more damaging in many ways.
Oh, yes. And there's nobody to point to the suffering other than just this is what we did by accident.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was part of what pointed me in the new directions that I was taking, certainly into massage school mm-hmm, and... Mm-hmm. You know, it seemed like there's some quality of pursuit towards some kind of feeling,
right?
perhaps I'm uncomfortable and I'm pursuing some kind of comfort. And then the pursuit of that comfort, if I don't recognize all of those interconnected relationships, then I can inadvertently cause harm. And so that was part, I'll leap over to the astrology, because astrology, the basic foundation is, you know, what's happening inside me is not independent of what's happening everywhere else.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And so, and I'm gonna take a leap here, just because the way you introduced astrology 5-10 minutes ago was almost as a tool by which to trace those connections and those impacts, to posit them not in a definitive way, but to posit them in a way that forces you to interrogate yourself and your environment with intention that you might not otherwise have. And it's the quality of that intention that makes you see things you would not have seen had you not been so intentional. And in that sense, astrology can be an incredibly useful tool, regardless of what people feel about its spiritual universal efficacy, because as a tool, it is incredibly, could be liberating in just the way you described it.
Thank you. You did much better than I could have.
No, but I mean, that's what I heard in those words. And I've been meditating on this as we've anticipated this interview. People need tools that work for them, that unlock their prejudice, or that unlock their blind spots, but also that bless what they do well and encourage them to carry on. Anyway, I'll stop there. But
no, I like it when you're talking, Eric. That's you know, it's one of those things you can get so deeply into it. I can forget how to come out and talk to somebody about it.
Yeah.
At times.
But okay. So this is your practice now. What does that look like?
Right. Well, you know, oftentimes people think of astrology as being sort of like a counseling and a therapeutic model.
We live in a world that has that as kind of the only thing you can legitimately do is get therapy.
Exactly. Yeah. And I love that. I saw my own astrologer, Linda Ruth, here in town for years, sometimes every month, in order to get to the depth of some of my own personal issues. And the insight, you know, through those conversations was profound and helpful every step of the way. And I do offer that kind of support to people in my life. But what really excites me about astrology is taking it as the tool,
right,
and applying it to society and larger groups of people. Because I feel like a lot of, you know, the people I come into contact with, they're like, I feel a little bit broken because I'm experiencing this discomfort. Why is that? Mm-hmm. And when we look at it astrologically, we often find there's nothing broken about you. What you're feeling is just an honest reflection of your environment. And I would often describe it personally, this would be my words, sure, as a call to service, a call towards what needs attention. And so I think that astrology, you know, this is not a brand new thing. Other people do this, mm-hmm, but I would like to see it developed more as a tool for, you know, how to address these larger problems, the collective problems, the ones that it feels like if I do something about it, really nothing's going to change. But if we do something about it, then there's a possibility for some real improvement.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I guess what I see is almost a step before the actual doing of anything. By having this tool or this structure for identifying or appreciating what hurts,
right,
and appreciating it for some time before you act, or as you act, you see the ripples of various effects, and you're open to that. That's to me is that's the moment where the real work happens. Is the appreciation leads to an awareness that if I touch this and it recoils in this way or it moves in that way, then I have to be aware.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. That's well spoken. You know, for me, it's that question again of what damage am I doing, mm-hmm. you know, unintentionally? Mm-hmm. And this astrological tool is really good at addressing that particular question. Mm-hmm. You know, how can I actually pursue the thing that I want without causing these unintended consequences?
Yes. And you have a show on Sunday afternoons from 6 to 7 p.m. And how do you address those issues in the format of that radio show here on WRFI?
Oh, well, to the best of our ability.
Always.
Always.
Or at least to the best you can do it that day at that hour.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I'm on with Tim and Lindsay at the moment. And I'll tell you, what we really want to be doing is sparking a bigger conversation. And let me put it this way. I think that those unintended negative consequences oftentimes come from that hubristic or arrogance of knowing what's going on and knowing what's needed. Mm-hmm. And a little too often, that's what I find in you know, an academic sphere, in a rational sphere, or even just in public discourse. If we want to convince others of our perspective, we're sort of expected to come in knowing exactly where we stand and what we think is needed.
Right, and that that expectation produces a kind of anxiety that makes us unaware of our impact. For
Absolutely.
Example, yeah. One of my anthropology professors as an undergraduate here at Cornell saw me working using a skill saw, and she said, "You're holding your breath. It's not going to cut straight right. if you hold your breath. You have to relax and just move with it. Because when you are trying to deal with your anxiety and force it to where you want it to go, it's not going to go."
Right.
You know.
Right.
So.
Yeah, so in bringing astrology on air, like, we're not looking to replace any of the other ways of doing things mm-hmm. or the other tools or the other perspectives. We're just hoping to add one which brings a little bit more openness, which invites that quality of sort of mystery mm-hmm. and recognizes that if you know something, it oftentimes is because you're imposing boundaries on the situation. You're sort of saying, here's the variable we're looking at. Anything outside of that doesn't matter to us.
Right. And you've used the word no in terms of its meaning as certainty, but no is
of
also
certainty. Thank you.
And
yeah.
But no is also the word that means to have intercourse with or to have sexual relationships or right. intimacy in any form.
That's
in which
true.
That's the opposite meaning, is that in that intimacy you don't have any certainty about it, but you have an engagement.
Yeah, so that level of engagement is a beautiful sort of metaphor for what we do in astrology. Yeah. There's no certainty
right.
whatsoever. You don't get certainty. And
you get engaged.
You get engaged. Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
Yeah. And
so we want more people to engage in this
right.
in this perspective right. with us is really what we're looking for.
And what I see as exciting is that many people are searching for those qualities in their practices or their religious traditions or spiritual traditions that get them to that quality of knowing as engagement without certainty. And I see many people trying to loosen up to do that within Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, Hinduism, Judaism, and
right.
and you're saying in astrology, and to me, and I am to take on that challenge. I almost don't care what your discipline is, because that's honest with respect to, from my experience, what it means to be engaged with the reality that, from my Christian tradition, is a God-given quality that we need to live in relationship with. So it's people need to pick a discipline, any discipline. You can always change it. That was a line from one of my seminary professors, is just to encourage you, when the wonder is gone, that practice is dead to you. It's time to change it. And what you're doing is you're inviting people to try this practice to see if it can open them up.
Absolutely.
We got about 10 minutes left.
Okay.
And what I want to do, and I had hoped to break for a song, but we got kind of deep for a minute there. And I want to go in a slightly different way of depth. What do you do on a daily basis, weekly, monthly, yearly, to restore yourself and emotionally, intellectually, and physically? How do you know when you're out of balance and that you need to do something, and what do you do?
Oh, great question.
Just practical, yeah, just everyday stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I am a new parent. So there's the last 14 months. And
sleeplessness, or actually, does this child sleep?
We don't get enough sleep in our house, not by a long shot.
Yeah.
And certainly sleep is a big one. Mm-hmm. Sleep was something that I've always known I need, and was my biggest concern prior to becoming a parent. And so I'll kind of describe my current real time as a parent, which is usually not quite there.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, my wife would tell you that I have a way of being here and not being here at the same time.
By which you mean?
I'm not sure exactly where I go, but I do know that I make this choice inside myself to kind of have a space. And I would say it feels almost like a physical location, mm-hmm. that I bring, and not just my attention. You know, I'll bring my breath there, but really everything that I have any say over, that I associate as being me, and I withdraw it into a space that feels like totally defined by me, somewhere inside my body.
Yeah. So that everything can be going on around you, but you are completely disassociated from it. You're not.
Yeah, and it's a little like a reset button. And, you know, as time goes by, I can become better and better at going there for a shorter period, like, mm-hmm, you know, half, mm-hmm, a second.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And if I can get there for even that half a second and sort of just close the door, then it gives me that reset, and then I can swing the door back wide and I can show back up into the room with the people there and
refreshed, renewed, ready to go again.
Yeah.
That's what I hear you're saying.
Yeah.
And if people try to pull you out of that when you're not ready to come out,
it's ugly.
Yes.
It's ugly.
Yeah, I'm one of seven. Sixth of seven surviving eight born children, two-bedroom house, so crowded. I have that space, that sort of space that I can go to, but it's terribly hard, been terribly hard for partners or for my kids to know how to be with me, and for me to know how to be responsible for going into that space, because you have to have a cue for how you go out,
right,
in order for it to be fair to those around you.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
When did you discover that you had that space?
As early as I can remember, and I've done work to really improve on it over the years, mm-hmm, with a number of different teachers and practices.
And so what does it mean to improve on it? What have you done to improve that space?
You know, sometimes it means going there when I don't need to go there. And literally, like, nurturing it like it were a garden, and bringing...
Doing a little preventive maintenance.
Yeah, exactly right. I think it's pretty simple in that sense. Yeah. Uh-huh. Being open to new ideas, mm-hmm, in things I read or things people tell me. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a self within the self that's not...
Oh, it's a great way to describe it.
By like everything that around it. Yeah. So what do you do? What do you do for physical restoration and for? I see that as having a powerful intellectual and emotional quality. But what do you do to keep yourself physically attuned? And
yeah, absolutely. Um, there were times when I was far more active, mm-hmm. and in many ways I become a little more still. Breathing is a very physical act, yes. to me, and
caring for an infant is a very physical act, which when I ask the question, I realize that's a silly question. I'm asking a new parent.
There's a lot of physical activity. That's where I'm struggling, no doubt. I pick him up. He's so fast right now, and he can climb anywhere. Okay. I'm waiting to see him hanging from the lights up on the ceiling next time I get home. But I do get outside all the time. Being outside is much different for me than being inside. And I like walking. I really mm-hmm. do enjoy walking. We right now have a little dog.
Right.
And she loves going out to do the rounds. Uh-huh. And I love getting out with her. There's many things I enjoy: getting out on the water, getting out of doors.
Sure.
And I find that I need to do those less and less. And in many ways, there's a kind of just attention I need to bring to myself, mm-hmm. and my breath, and it kind of does the same thing of rejuvenation in some ways.
Yeah, that's really neat.
Getting a massage from my wife never hurts.
No, well,
in case
yeah.
she's listening.
Yes. Uriel, it's been wonderful to get to know you.
Thank you, Eric. It's been a pleasure to have a conversation.
What should we listen to as our closing the show song?
Oh, can we finish with a Krishna Das? That'd
sure,
be really,
absolutely.
That'd be really great.
Okay.
Shri Guru Charana Saroja Raja Nijamana Makur Sudhari Bharanam Raghubara Vimala Jaso Jodayaku Palachari Buddhihina Tanu Janike Sumiram Bhavana Kumar Bala Budi Vidya Dehu Muni Harahu Kalesh Bhika Bhaje Lodji Hanuman Bhaje Lodji Hanuman Bhaje Lodji Hanuman Bhaje Lodji Hanuman Jaya Hanuman Jnana Guna Sagar Jaya Kapishati Loka Ujaga Rama Duta Tulita Baladama Anjani Putra Pavana Sutanama Mahavira Vikrama Bajarangi Kumati Nirvara Sumati Kesangi Kanchana Varana Viraja Subesa Kanana Kundala Kunchita Kesa Bhaje Lodji Hanuman Bhaje Lodji Hanuman Bhaje Lodji Hanuman Bhaje Lodji Hanuman Hata Vajra Paradvaja Viraje Khande Muja Jane Usaje Shankara Suvana Kesari Nanda Teja Pratapa Mahajagabanda Vidyavan Guni Ati Chatur Ramakaja Karibeko Atur Prabhu Charitra Sunibeko Rasiya Rama Lakana Sita Mana Basiya Bhaje Lodji Hanuman Bhaje Lodji Hanuman Bhaje Lodji Hanuman He Bhaje Lodji Hanuman Rupa Darisi Ahindikava Nikata Rupa
hari lanka jarava bhima rupa dari asura sanghare ramachandra ke kaj samare laya sajivana lakan jiyaye shri raghuvira har shiur laye raghupati kinhi bahut baraye mama priya bharat sammabai bhajlo ji hanuman he bhajlo ji hanuman bhajlo ji hanuman bhajlo ji hanuman sahas badan tumaro jasaga कहि श्रीपति कंद लगा सनकादिक प्रमादि मुनीश नारद शारद सहित जम कुबेर दिगपाल जहांते कवि कोविद कहि सके कहांते तुम उपकार सुग्रीवन कीना राम मिलाय रज पद दीना bhajlo ji hanuman he bhajlo ji hanuman bhajlo ji hanuman bhajlo ji hanuman tumaro mantra vibhishana mana lankeshwar bhaye sab jag jana युग सहस्त्र जो जन परमानु दीर्योथाहि मधुर पल जानु प्रभु मुद्रिका मिलि मुख माही जलधि लंगी गए अचर जनाही।